Welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from the CPL Laundry. I'm here with Jen Downs, aka the mother of Antibes. We'll go into why I call her that a bit later on. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for agreeing to do it. I know you're a bit nervous about coming on, but like, we're all friends. Obviously, to start off every episode, we talk about how did you get on a CPL?
Well, my story isn't so much about racing to get the job or I didn't even know about this industry.
A lot don't. I'm finding out they all end up in it by accident.
I'm from New York. I'm a native New Yorker, rare breed, born and raised. September 11th happened. At that time, I had just started a catering business with one of my best friends. Okay, I was Before that, I was by trade. I'm a clinical psychologist by trade. I have a master's in clinical. But I put myself through school by working in all these restaurants for these high-end chefs. And it was an amazing experience. And by the time I got out of school, they told me how much I can make. And I said, well, I'm already making this amount working in these high-profile restaurants. One of my friends took me in and said, I want you to manage my restaurant, and it was such an amazing experience. And we had about 65 employees, and every night after work I was going out, and I was like,
how old are you at this point?
Oh god, I was 23
in New York.
And I came back to the head chef and I said, can we just jump in the kitchen and just work at night? And he said, well, that's kind of illegal. And I said, but I need to keep myself busy or I'm going to go out every night and get really drunk. And so he said, oh, can you cook? I said, I can cook. I love cooking. And, you know, he tortured me, but I peeled carrots for a good month and potatoes. And then he brought me into the line. And eventually he realized that I can cook. And it's always been a passion of mine. It's really? My creative edge. And he pulled me aside and he said, well, we can find the funding to do a catering business, then you're the person, you've already managed, you know, this restaurant. It was a four-story restaurant on Madison and 73rd. It was called Cello, and it was spectacular because cello is the finest instrument, mm-hmm. finest sounding instrument, so was the food. So we ventured out, we found the capital, and we started a catering business, and it was phenomenal, okay? And all of our clients were celebrities or, you know, very wealthy families from the Upper East Side. And we were running on a high. It was amazing. You know, all of a sudden now I was Chef Jen, okay?
Chef Jen.
But I already had this in me. Even my mom, even as a teenager, my mom was like, how did you make this? Like, and I was like, I love cooking. And she was always like, okay, whatever, you need to study. Because Americans are like, need to study, need to get a university degree. This is what you need to do. Anyway, long story short, September 11th happened and the whole thing went bust.
Were you in New York when it happened?
Yes. Yes. I lived on 73rd in Columbus and I always ran across Central Park every morning to get to work. And I just heard an explosion, and it's not very close to where it happened. I just felt the ground shake, and I looked up, and I was like, well, that's really strange. I was like, all right, well, you know, I continued running to work, because I was always late. I was young. I was probably out all night. And I arrived to the restaurant, and a few of the, you know, the people who were in charge of the dishwashing station said, the twins are on fire. And I was like, I don't understand. And we didn't have these phones back then.
No, it was TV.
And so at the top of the restaurant, there was a penthouse apartment. And we put the television on. And that night we were out with a couple of bartenders who worked on Windows of the World. And when we turned the television on, one tower was shaking, was already on fire. And I used my little phone that was in the penthouse. I started calling my friends. I was like, what's happening? And one of my other really good friends said, Jen, I don't know, but I can't get a hold of anyone. I said, okay. And then the second tower got hit. And my friend Julio said, I think my mom's in that tower.
I said,
I started screaming. We just started screaming, and I ran down. And this is a four-story restaurant. And I said, everyone go home. Everyone needs to go home. And my phone was ringing on my desk. Picked it up. And it was the head chef's ex-wife who said, I'm not sending my daughter to New York. We're canceling this trip because obviously there's something happening. And I said, okay, yeah, great. I'll let him know. Ran through the restaurant, sent everyone home, closing everything down. And it was really upsetting because the head chef, he had just woken up. He had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So when after locking everything up and trying to run back across Central Park, we had to have a big argument about it. And I'm like, you have no idea what's happening. And it was, I know that they were showing people going on and off the Brooklyn Bridge. But when I tried to get to my father's house, who lived in New Jersey, I walked to the George Washington Bridge, they wouldn't let us over.
Really?
And I remember my father saying, I don't know if I'm going to see you again. And I was like, I can't. And then my mother had moved to Connecticut. So I went down to take the train to try to get to her. It's like a rail, it's a railroad train.
Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't let us off the island. So there was a majority of us stuck on the island.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally stuck.
We're literally stuck.
They locked a whole island down.
I had no reason to go to Brooklyn. I didn't know anyone in Brooklyn. I was like, ugh. And I lived on the Upper West Side where there was restaurants and bars. We were having an end of the world party. And it was madness. Eventually, we started closing down business. My job was to close it all down. And eventually looking for another job, I was just so disheartened. And I said, I cannot. Yeah, I was so happy being my own boss at the time. And I started working for other places. And I said, this is not making me happy. And I met a woman in one of the restaurants I worked at after, and her name was Monique. And she said, listen, you seem pretty stressed out, and I just left an island called St. Martin. And I was running a place there, and you have all the skills there. Why don't you apply for the job? Well, the following Friday, I was at a Starbucks talking to the owners of a restaurant, and by the next Friday, I was in the Caribbean.
Do you think, obviously, everybody, hospitality is all about having a good time.
Mm.
And psychologically, after the Twin Towers, nobody was interested
nobody
in having
was interested.
No. Van love, that's what hospitality is about, bringing people together, like the shock and how scared people were.
Yeah.
That reverberated through the industry that you were.
It was shocking. I mean, I remember I bought a bicycle. And I was, riding my bicycle to work, and then I would have to check it in. And if you had too many drinks, you couldn't ride your bicycle home. I remember being pulled over, and they said, so you're obviously intoxicated. And I started laughing. I was like, I just don't want to take the metro. Because every time I was in the metro, it would stop, and I would panic.
Yeah,
and it
stop.
Was sheer panic attack. And
oh,
I would,
gosh.
And me and everyone else on the train would try to get out. We tried to climb through the tunnel, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So once they offered me that job in St. Martin, I was like, I'm going. And I took about $130,000 pay cut.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but you are going to a tropical paradise.
I was. And they were paying me $2,000 a month for only 6 months.
Right.
I left everything behind, and I left.
How did you feel when you arrived?
I felt.
You remember.
I love the heat. I love warm climates, and I had to adjust to the different culture, because in New York everything gets done. It's like snap your fingers, it gets done. But when you move to the Caribbean, everything gets done on Caribbean time. So people would say it's too hot to work, man, and I'm like, oh,
relax, Jen.
Relax. And I was trying to make everything perfect, and it was a great time. And then of course you have your family that calls you, and they're like, this is not a serious job. You have your degree, you need to move back home.
Mm-hmm.
So the pressure was there. And I'm sure a lot of yacht crew have that pressure. I meet so many yacht crew that have law degrees.
Mm.
I had someone who was about to be a doctor. I'm like, what are you doing here? And they're like, this is just too much for me. Anyway, I went back for about a year, and I packed my bags. I left, went back to St. Martin, and I never came home again. And then, of course, I met my husband.
Right, okay, so set the scene, because I've known you for many years now. Mm. I was an individual that stayed at your crew house.
Yes.
So I know you and your husband. So set the scene. So he's like bronze Adonis walking down the beach, or like what happened? Love at first sight.
I ended up working for one of the senators' son in St. Martin, and I should I had anything I wanted, basically. And I walked into this nightclub. It was locals only night. And I was with one of my friends, Tanya, and we walked in, and he describes it like the music stopped and then like everyone cleared the path. But it was true. We walked in and we started dancing and having fun, and he tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked him over to my other friends. I was like, who is this? Who brought the boat boy?
The boat boy.
And they were like, oh, I did. And I'm like, they doing here? They're like, they're buying champagne. I was
that definitely needs to be Jason's new nickname, the boat boy.
Who brought the boat boys? Because he was with his
crew.
And it was my friend Rodolfo brought them over, and he's like, I really like them. And I was like, okay, well, make sure that they stay away from me, because I don't understand. They always come and go, and I knew nothing about yachting. So he came in, and he was really friendly. He bought champagne, so why not? We went to the next nightclub and met him. And I thought nothing of it. And the next day, my friend Rodolfo was like, you were so rude to him. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And the next day, about a few days later, we saw them on the beach, and I had to apologize. But I apologized to him. I said, I'm so sorry. It was locals only, and I didn't expect these new people. And he was like, it's fine. We started chatting a bit. 2 weeks later, I'm hitchhiking in St. Martin, as you do back then.
Right, okay.
And he pulled over, and I said, well.
Hi.
Hi. And we just started chatting. I need to get to the side of the island. And I was with a few friends, and he just came out of nowhere, and he said, can I invite you to dinner? And I said, yeah, sure, why not? You're really friendly. You're nice. You put up with me. And our first date was amazing. It was like we just chatted and ate dinner, and we had a 6-course tasting, and he said to me, hardly anyone I take on a date never finishes all their food, but you do. And I'm like, yes, I love food. And I remember the first night he said, you're going to be the mother of my children. And I was like,
wow.
I was like, you really have to stop drinking.
No way.
He did.
First day.
He did that on the second date. And I was like, oh my God, what's wrong with this man? Anyway, he's a yacht captain, right?
Right.
So he said, well, you know, can I see you again? He had to leave. And I said, oh yeah, I'll be here. I was like, but you probably have a girl in every port. And of course, you know, being yacht captain, he said, I have two. I said, well, okay, you all better be the only one here. Because I wasn't leaving. And he said, well, I'm doing a circumnavigation of the world, and I'd like you to join me.
Wow.
And I said, oh, no way. I'm a single girl living on the island, and I work for one of the senators' son. And I was like, I'm not leaving paradise. I don't even know you. And he said, I can't believe that you know how many people would have to take this opportunity. I was like, no.
The captain charm didn't work. He's like, what?
It didn't work.
You didn't hit.
So
like, did you not hear that? I'm a captain.
He was so cocky, and that was the first time I think he was turned down, and it was funny. And so he did come to visit me every month. He would come to visit, and about 7 months later, he had to sit me down. He's like, "What is happening, Jen? This is like we're really great together." And I think I was done with the partying and having fun, and I did fall in love with him. We fell in love.
Even though he's a captain. Yeah.
And I did join him on his boat. He's going to hate this story. He hates it, but it's true. And I was like, people are like, so how did you get on the boat? So I was like, he offered me a job that didn't exist.
Just to get you on the boat.
I was like, so I was kidnapped? was like, and I couldn't imagine, like, now knowing about the yachting industry, what did the owners of the boat think?
So what was your job? Did you actually have a position?
So me not knowing anything about the yachting community, right? He's like, well, you'll be second chef. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And I didn't know that there's no second chef on a 120-foot sailing yacht. And when I joined, I mean, he had convinced the owner that I needed to be there. And now looking at the industry now, I'm like, what yacht owner would agree to this? Obviously, it was a good captain. You didn't want to lose him. And yeah, I remember getting there and it was just a disaster. You know, I said, I'm not getting paid and you sent me a contract. I was like, wait, I've been kidnapped. And anyway, he hates the story. He cringes every time. But then he finally admitted to me. He said, I didn't know how to be with you for the rest of my life.
Oh, so he kidnapped you. That's fine.
He did. And he hates the story. So sorry, Jason. But he admitted. He's like,
it's kind of romantic.
It's kind of
in a kind of like scary kind of way. Because it could have, you know, if you weren't that into it, it could have gone really bad.
This could have gone so wrong. But, you know, when we were crossing the Panama Canal, there is like a webcam that you can dial in. And I call my mom. And I'm like, so we're on this boat. And can you imagine calling your mom? I'm so in love with this captain. And I'm running away. And it was the first time that my parents have spoken in 30 years. And they put me on a conference call. So now I'm running away with someone who they don't know, on a boat with not too much communication. And she could see me through the webcam.
What was a movie like back in the day? Like your parents would have watched it where, you know, they're on a boat and there's a serial killer. Oh, what is that classic movie? It probably like they would have been that generation that watched that movie and basically there's a couple on a boat and then this psycho guy comes on. So they're probably just thinking,
First she left her Ivy League degree and her high paying job and her business. And then she's moved to this island and then she's met some random. And now that I'm a parent, I'm like, yeah, that's never going to happen to my children. But yeah, they were really worried. But yeah, it all worked out. It's 19 years later.
Wow, that's very cool. Right. So you're on a boat.
Yeah.
So you're going through this. So you're on the boat in the Caribbean for quite some time. Like, where did you go?
So we sailed from Miami through Central America. This is a great story. I'm from New York City, but my mother's from Puerto Rico. My father's from Ecuador. So I'm my first language is Spanish.
That's where the gorgeous hair comes from.
So I speak Spanish, English. I understand other languages. So we're going through Central America. And I remember we got to Belize or somewhere. And they tied us up against this banana boat. It was 40 degrees. And it's the stench. I was like, oh, my God, what's the smell? And I went up. And there were these, like, six immigration officers coming into the boat. And I said, Jason, give me some money. He was like, I'm not paying them. I was like, this is welcome to Central America. Mm-hmm. And we got all through Central America, through Nicaragua, Panama, all because I spoke Spanish.
Wow.
Because they were like, you need to pay us. You need to really pay us. And he was like, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. I was like, it might not work like that in your world. But here, if we want to get taken off this rotting banana boat, we're going to have to, and we paid them something like 50 bucks, 50 euros, 50
per person. Yeah, yeah.
And then they gave us this whole stack of cigarette cartons and stamped our passports and they're like, welcome to Panama. But we had a few incidents where they were, you know, bringing these dogs onto the boat to check for drugs. And I was like, you are not bringing these dogs onto this white carpet. And I said it in Spanish. And they were like, yes, no problem. We didn't realize that you were Spanish. You were obviously.
Wow.
Yeah. So you, like, I would suggest if you go through Central America, you need to have a Spanish speaker on the boat.
It's quite common knowledge that you have to bribe officials. You know, I remember that they used to have to give tips to
is
the
bribing or
to
is
the
it?
The guys in Monaco port. So like the guys that are just doing the lines, they used to actually wrap notes around coke cans and like, you know, there you go. Like, you know,
yes, money talks. I mean, but in these countries, you have to remember they're very poor.
Mm.
And when we tried to get through the Panama Canal, they said, do you want a pilot? And of course, the Yell captain's like, no, we don't need a pilot. And I was like, oh, yes, we need a pilot. And it was such an argument. And I was like, you have no idea. I just asked him in Spanish, how long these other boats been out here? And he said, oh, basically, they didn't want a pilot, so they've been here for weeks. And I was like, I gotcha. And I ordered the pilot, and we're screaming. We had just, like, it's 7 months into our long-distance relationship. We just moved into with each other. We're screaming at each other. And I was like, Jason, you have no idea. He basically told me, we're going to be one of those boats if we don't get a pilot. So I really, you know, that was my job, getting us through these. And then, you know, in hindsight, he turned around and he said, well, that was amazing. And because you have to be really aggressive. You have to, you know, we're very passionate people, you know, Latin people. So it's like, I got them through that. And eventually Jason had a phone call from his dad. He had a family member who was passing away, and they called us to get to Australia. And yeah, there I was again, moving with the captain. So it's not like I knew what I was getting into, but I knew I was very much in love. And we spent some time in Australia, and we got this phone call from one of Jason's friends and said, I have a job for you and your wife. No. So that was seven. We were going through Central America 7 months. After 7 months knowing each other, moved to Australia about month nine. And month 10, Jason asked me to marry him.
Yeah. No.
A lot of young ladies out there is going to hate this story. And we got married under 6 months. Now, mind you, it was very difficult to be in the same country at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I had a visa to be in Australia for 3 months. And yeah, we got married 6 weeks later. And we got a phone call from one of Jason's friends saying, we need a captain and chef team in the Bahamas. And I said, I am not leaving. Because Australia is beautiful. Have you ever been there?
Yeah. I've lived there a couple of times.
And Jason's family is amazing. And I said, I don't need...
They're quite foodie over there as well. Like, if you like food, I love, like, especially, like, seafood. They're very, you know, very into it. The best coffee I've ever had, sorry.
Was in Australia.
They take their coffee so seriously. Yeah. Like, I just ordered a cappuccino and the guy put a dragon on the top. I'm like... How the hell did you do that? And are you on minimum wage? Like, I don't understand. Yeah. Like, he literally used the toothpick and put a dragon on the top of it.
Just their cafes, their salads, everything's so fresh and beautiful. And I said, I'm not leaving paradise until they pay us this much money. And he looked at me and he said, I would never ask for that. And I said, but I'm not leaving. And he told him on the phone, he said, this is how much we need to make as a couple, and that's it. And he sent us an email with our tickets. And he turned to me, he said, I never thought we'd get paid that much. I said, well, you know, you have to know your... And, you know, coming from New York, we negotiate everything, you know, and he didn't realize that you can negotiate. I don't know, maybe he was in yachting too long. He arrived into this yachting scene 25 years ago, where it was really new, and you take what you can get.
Yeah.
And so
I think with guys, it's, you know, they're wanting to climb the ranks, so, you know, they want that, like, to get that first captain position. They might not maybe necessarily get the salary that they should.
I mean, he was a captain at 24 when I met him. He was already 30. So I said, what do you mean? I was like, no, I'm not going anywhere. And we got mind you, I had never cooked for him because he decided he was going to do everything. He took over everything. So when we got to our first yacht in Bahamas, we stayed there for about 6 or 8 months. And Bahamas is Paris, but have you been there?
No.
It's heaven. I said to my son, I was like, I'm going to take you to the Bahamas. It's magic. And you know what my son said to me? Is it better than Antib, Mama? Like, he realized how beautiful it is here. Anyway, we worked, and, you know, I started sending the food out. And I think Jason turned to the other captain who was doing the handover and said, do you have another chef here? He said, no, this is your wife's cooking. Like, he didn't know how talented I was. you know, and he was like, it blew his mind. I said, well, he would always like bully me in the kitchen and tell me that that bowl wasn't there for the, and I was like, I just let you do whatever you want because actually I know what I'm talking about. I know what I'm doing.
That's quite mad.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, that he was like that. Just blinded by love. He didn't care whether you could cook or not. He literally was just blinded by love.
So anyway, we spent 6-8 months in the Bahamas, had an amazing time, and then found another job in South France.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about 2 or 3 years. No, it was another 2 years. And
so obviously you're like, you know, you're in love. Mm-hmm. You're married.
Or working together.
Working together. Did you like, you know, obviously you've literally, what is it? You've just kind of gone with the flow of where you've ended up.
I just went with the flow. And I started, like, when you first contacted me, I started thinking about it. I was like, yeah, I kind of just went with it. But I was really confident with myself. And I think that's what some young men and women, when I meet them, that's what they're missing. You know, everyone has this special talent.
Mm.
And they don't bring it forward. Because, you know, when I sit with them and I look at their CV and I'm like, you know, what about this? What about that? And they're like, well, I don't think I should put that on my CV. I was like, no, this is part of your character, you know? And I knew that I can do it. You know, at one point I got paid more than Jason. He's going to hate this story.
Sorry, Jason.
The owner of the boat said, I hope you can drive this bus. And Jason said, we're not taking this job. I was like, oh, yes, we are. I mean, I was able to get, I got to a point where we negotiated monthly. I got 5% commission on the charter, and I got tips, you know, so.
You got commission on the charter?
I got commission on the charter.
Wow.
And I remember sitting on the interview, just not speaking, and the owner of the boat was like, I hope you're as good as you give it right now, because I can't, I'm really taking a chance with you.
That's amazing.
And we went for a trial. I had to cook for him and his wife and the crew, and it was 5 courses later, and he brought me down to the cabin with Jason. He said, you're amazing. I hope you can drive this bus. When he said, that's Jason. And I was the number 3 yacht chef for the big white YPI book in 2008.
Wow.
So it was based on my menus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really happy, and Jason was really frustrated because he would drive the boat and then he would just wait around for me. And for me, it's about like perfecting it. I needed to like, that's my creative edge.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss it.
Feel free to cook for me whenever you like. Yeah.
We're building a house now, so when it's finished, I will invite you over.
It's like camping outside, aren't you? So obviously you're living your best life at this moment in time.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you were like, I don't, you know, was there a turning point where you're like, I'm not loving it as much.
I remember, anymore. Yeah, it was a full time. It was our second or third year here.
No rotation when you were on board, no?
No rotation. But, you know, the deal was we didn't have to do a full winter,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the boss started to think about where he can fly me to. So I had to fly to Switzerland. I had to fly to London. I'm like, but you have 20 chefs. He's like, but you must teach them this recipe. I was like, sent it to them, you know, but he just enjoyed my company. And there was no funny stuff. It was all business. And
I mean, because that turns into it, like, I know a couple of individuals that were yacht chefs, and now they're the private boss's chef. So, like, whenever he's, you know, in certain locations, on the boat or in certain cities, they just get a call and say, right, I'm entertaining, you're doing stuff, you're coming on.
Mm. He would fly.
Which isn't like, is that a dream job for a chef? Like, you just, but then you don't know, you can't really organize your life.
What started happening, I didn't mind doing it because it was winter time, and I get, living in a small seaside town where there's not much going on, I was happy to go somewhere else. I would fly to Switzerland. I was like, I didn't even know who I was cooking for. And I remember leaving the chalet, and they would say, there were children saying, do you want to take a picture with him? I said, I have no idea who this is. And it was like the Chelsea soccer team. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'm walking.
Doesn't really matter.
And or there's like, is the owner of Sainsbury, or you know, is this,
which is like, you know, to, thinking back to that time with the dietary requirements back then, was anybody like gluten free back then?
There were vegetarians, but I'm okay I'm okay with that. Like, I love, I can do raw food, I can do vegetarian. It's all a challenge. But
there wasn't back then,
huh?
There wasn't gluten free dairy, like. I don't remember it even when, like, serving it.
Maybe people didn't realize what they needed. But my biggest challenge was family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you don't realize how much you miss in Yachty. You miss every birthday. And you can call home and send flowers, but...
It's not the same.
When someone passes away, you start thinking about everything you missed.
Yeah.
And... that was my last year of Yachty. My mother had passed away.
No.
And I got a phone
call. Were you there?
I was there, certainly. And, you know, I have to say that the owner of the boat was very flexible with me. It happened during winter. She was about to come to visit us. We had a trip planned to Corsica because her family name is, my grandfather is Corsican. And I remember saying, what do you mean you can't come? And she said, you must call my doctor. And I think that's when it settled in. I was like, and they said, you need to come home now because your mom has 6 months to live. I said, well, and it's just going through your head. How could this happen? Now I have all this money. And I brought the money to her and I had to pay for cancer in the US, which was, it was insane, you know? And she died 6 months to the day that the doctor had told me that she was going to die. And of course, I'm still paying for cancer and all these bills, so I had to go back to work. And I went back to work with like a stiff upper lip, and I did 6 months and no day off. Okay? And that's what was expected of me. And I have to say that the owner of the yacht did pay for most of those flights. I took 36 flights back and forth. And I'll never forget, somebody called me during her chemo treatment, and it was one of the charter guests. And he said, I just heard about your mom, and I just want to say that my family's praying for you, and we have a church on our property in England. And I just burst into tears. Like, I said, how amazing is that? The charter guest said to me, we're praying for your mom in my church. And I'll never forget that moment. His name was Mr. Gallagher. And, you know, I went back to work. And I think what happens is, like, you miss so many things. And now, right now, when I meet young men and women whose parents are ill,
yep.
I pull them in. I'm like, you need to go home right now.
Yep.
You know, I said, I understand what you're going through.
The thing is, you never regret spending more time with them.
No.
And I think, you know, obviously every career that you decide to, you know, go into, there's a payoff somewhere.
Mm.
You know, there is a payoff somewhere. You get a land-based job and you never get to travel. You're saying you get to travel. Mm. You get all of these opportunities, but you do, you know, it's one of those things. Yachties dread the phone call. Because you don't know, you know, you will miss weddings, you will miss birthdays, and you know they're tragic. But you just worry.
You need to live your life, right?
Yeah, it's finding that compromise somewhere.
It's so difficult.
You know, I know of individuals that have been going through that. So like a really close family member, but not necessarily their mum or dad.
Mm.
And the boat saying you can't go.
Oh no. I mean, he was very supportive. He's like, you can go, we'll find a replacement. But when the charters hit, you have to be here. And that was a good compromise. I understood. But I went in, and that was the hardest thing to do. That was the hardest, just go back into it. But it was the most creative time of my life because I was just concentrating on my grief, and I was creating different food, and it was... it was really lethargic to just create food and create menus. And no one understood me on board. You know, I would have the stew say to me, why are you not hanging out with us? And I'm like, I just can't. I need to be.
It's amazing that you actually went back. and survived that long.
Yeah, well, we had a mortgage. We had, I was still paying for cancer. I got a whopping hospital bill of $400,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And I fought tooth and nail because it wasn't my bill. And I feel like big companies just take advantage of people who are grieving. So I had to fight for it. So you're dealing with that, and then you're dealing with the demand of the of the charter. And, you know, I can't fault the person, the owner of the boat. I hate to call him the owner because they didn't own me. He was the boss.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And, he did pay for a lot of flights, and he was supportive in a way, but I didn't think it was enough. But like I said, you don't really know what you're feeling at that time because it's just so up in the air. But Jason really wanted to keep that job. And I think I got to the point where I was like, actually, I don't want to do this anymore. The owner of the boat, so you, one of your questions you sent me was like, what's your craziest story? Mm-hmm. And some of them I cannot actually tell you. But one of the crazy experiences, like at the end of that 6 months and no day off, I remember the captain, who was Jason, he said, my husband, he said, we had other crew with us. He said, my crew need a day off. We need to just go our own ways. And he was yelling and screaming at us. And it was like, he couldn't find, the butler called us. He's like, you can't find the cocaine dealer. I'm like, how is that our problem? And he said, he said, can't do this, can't do that. And I said, okay. Well, we're still on charter. He's not allowed to touch the boat. So you're going to have to deal with him. Anyway, comes the next day, I can see him from his penthouse apartment looking at us with binoculars, and I look up with my binoculars, and I've had enough. And I'm like, that's it. And this is something I recommend for no one, okay? So I said, sir, I think you need to come down. We need to have a conversation with the crew, with you. And he said, he started cursing me out. He was not very nice on the phone. I said, you need to come. And I lost it. I think I turned to the crew and I said, get my knives and my cookbooks off the boat. And the stewardess was jumping up and down, literally crying. The engineer was like, what's happening? Jason's like, oh no. And Jason started taking our stuff off the boat. All I wanted was my knives and my cookbooks. That's it. I didn't need anything else. And I saw the owner of the bus walking towards us with his bodyguard. And I just ran towards him. I put my high heels on and started screaming at him. I was like, how could you treat us like this? I had to really stand up for the crew.
Yeah, yeah.
There was four or five of us. And I said, how could you treat us like this? I cannot believe that you're acting like such a baby. And the bodyguard was laughing because, you know, we were friends with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, Jen, just calm down. He's waving his hands. I said, no, I'm not going to calm down. I can tell him that he's acting like an absolute child. And 40 minutes, I was yelling at him. Jason just like honks the horn. The car was ready. I jumped in the car and he said, I'm actually going to kill you. I said, I feel better. I feel like 10 kilos lighter. And the boss puts, he's in front of the car, looks at me, and he stands in front of the car, puts his hands on the car and says, you guys are still on charter. So we should have thought about that before you treated us like this. And Jason gets out of the car and he's like, you and you. He turns to the boss and me. I said, both of you, 3 o'clock, we're going to have a meeting. You're both behaving like children. And I said, I'm not coming back. And Jason got us on the boat. Jason's the, you know, calmer of the two.
Yeah, yeah.
Got us on the boat. We had to raise our hand. This is like a millionaire and his chef. We had to raise our hand in order to speak. And Jason's like, okay, you go first. And I was like,
literally a mediator.
So I was like, oh, I'm gonna go. My hand was like up like the class nerd. And he said, you're a bully and you know about it. You know you're a bully. And he was like, I have aggressive form of management. And that's how I am. I was like, you're a bully. And he's screaming. And Jason stood up. He's like, you two are like two children. And I can't believe that this is happening. Anyway, we made up and I got him where it hurts the most. He said, okay, let's finish your contract up. And he said, my best friend's coming on board, the charter's canceled. And what did I do? I cooked him the best meal, the most unforgettable meal that he's ever had in his life as revenge.
They were like, see you, bye.
And then he came to me after and he said, you are the best chef ever. How you've never given me the same meal twice, even if I've asked for it. That's what's my job. And when we first opened the Grapevine, that boat has actually asked for day workers. It was, of course, a new captain. And the day workers would come back and they said, your picture is still in the lounge. We would give him gifts of like pictures of the crew making silly faces, and he pointed at it and he said, that's the best chef I ever had.
Aww.
So yeah, but that's the craziest story. I don't recommend it to anyone to chase the boss down the
Your food must have been amazing. That's all I can say.
I mean, we did. I mean, for them to give me 5% of charter.
I've never heard of that ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
But again, New York negotiating.
I've got a few deals that I maybe get you to negotiate.
Yeah, so I know my story sounds.
So like, you've come to the end. You know, that's
so
the
I've
end.
Come to the end. And
how did you pick France? So you've ended up in France.
Oh, no. So. Yeah. So Jason had he had purchased an apartment before he met me in France. Yeah. And when we were working in France for that family, and we tried to figure out what we wanted to do. And he was trying to renovate his apartment. So we actually took a magic marker on the wall and said, what do you call it? Traveling nomads. And he said, what do we need? We need an international airport because we're both from different countries.
Yep.
I knew I didn't want to go back to New York. What was I going to do with a yacht captain in New York? You know?
No.
Well, just going back.
There are a couple of yachts in New York.
When I first came to Antibes with him, I remember applying to all the crew agencies and they were like, she's never going to get a job because she doesn't know yachting. But like, there was one crew agent that read my CV. And she called me up. She's like, I have a job for you. And he said, no, we don't really deal with her. But no, I was like, I don't even know who she is. And when I walked in, she said, the chefs you work for are pretty amazing. I was like, I know. And she said, if I don't get you a job, you have a job in Vegas. And she said, do you know how much they want to give you in Vegas? I was like, I know. It was like $250,000 a year and an apartment and a car. And she's like, why would you turn that down? I was like, what am I supposed to do with him? I've just married.
There's definitely no yachts in Vegas.
I just married him. And I was like, and her name was Sarah Platt.
Oh, no way.
Yes, and they call her Simon Cowell of the yachting industry.
I heard she's quite brutal.
She's quite brutal, but I love her.
Like, honest,
she's honest. And New Yorkers are very honest.
Yeah.
So her and I got along really, and she's very professional. You just don't mess around. She's asked you for what she will ask your CV in a certain way, and you have to deliver.
Yep.
So I remember after that whole yachting incident where I basically told the boss what to do with this yacht, I went back to her office after, okay, we purchased the portside house and we ran out of money. And I went back into her office. I said, will you work with me again? She said, I want to hear your story. And after I told her the story, she said, you're the only person that I know did 2 years with that owner of that yacht. He's a very difficult man. And yes, I will certainly work with you again. And she sent me on every freelance job. I think I was making $400 a day. And that was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we finished the first crew house.
Portside.
Yeah.
I was a guest at
we
Portside.
We totally didn't know what we were doing.
I mean, by the time I got there, you know, it was good. Like, I'd found you online. Like, so I found out about yachting in New Zealand, and then did my CCW in Australia. So then I was like, right, okay, where can I stay?
Are you originally English, or where are you originally from?
Yeah, from the UK. Okay. But I'd already been traveling for like 8 years before I found yachting. So I was basically, I was in New Zealand trying to grow hairy feet and, you know, try and find Gandalf somewhere. I live with a load of hippies. That's another story. And found out about yachting, so I went to Australia, did my CCW, and while I was in New Zealand, so I worked for a law firm, and obviously pre-internet, which wasn't always a thing, people, like, back in the day, you used to have to go to cafes and pay. It wasn't that readily available, so I just researched yachting to death, so obviously every, you know, every article, there was a couple of books knocking around, and obviously the grapevine came up, you know, it was like, you know, print off your CV, all of those things.
Everything's
like, it's all, it's so different now, but like, I was like, it's a safe space. Do you know what I mean? Like it, you know, while I grip my feet, seems all right. So yeah, I came to Portside and yeah, so you'd finished Portside, although it was still kind of, you know, it was still bits that were like kind of working it out.
All the mismatch. Bedding, like that was probably an example that was going through my head because I had lost my mom and I was having a baby.
It was, but you were, so obviously you bought Portside, did it up. How did it, like, you know, obviously you were like, we're going to provide this crew house, like, who came up with the idea?
So look, Portside was supposed to be four apartments.
Oh, so it wasn't even supposed to be crew accommodation.
So I said to him, I said to Jason, I was like, you can't do this anymore. This is billionaire babysitting. This is all you're doing is taking care of grown adults and pampering them. And it's fine. I said, but I can't do this anymore. And I was actually going through a depression because my mother had passed away. And obviously I wasn't going to get another job because I chased the owner of that boat down the quay. So we bought the first house. I mean, we figured we would rent out four apartments. There's like studio, there's the upstairs, there's three, four, and five. So it would be four apartments. And in each room, you can see that there's like some plumbing to come into the room as we can just install a kitchenette there.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were building it, we hired some day workers. And we were cutting tiles, and one day worker said, this would make an amazing crew house. And Jason's like, yeah, this is definitely going to be for crew. It's going to be apartments. And I was like, so we kind of put the tools down and we went from crew house to crew house to crew house. And I'm like, okay, let's do it. Put in the beds, called our accountant, put us on a different, like, you know, you have to get a business license in France for what you're doing. Called him up. Can we do this? He said, well, let's just, you know, let's rent it out as apartments for now. And then if it's successful, then we'll, you know, we'll put on the level of furnished property. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like a hostel, but it's not.
No.
Okay. So we
It's not. I've stayed in hostels in other countries. Oh, no. Like it's not.
No.
That.
We have protocol. We have books.
It's clean. You know, like, you considering how many people live there, like, there's a lot of, like, it was, you know, it was the glamorous end of, if you wanted to call it a hostel, it was the very glam end.
Yeah. I mean, it's safe. We have security cameras in the entrance. We've actually put someone in jail who broke into two houses during COVID. And of course, you know, you always have mom and dad on the scene.
So obviously you're like, right, it's going to be a crew house. When was the official opening?
So of course I was full of hormones and acting crazy, and we ran out of money, and I went back to see, work freelance as a chef for up to 5 months, but I wasn't showing. I remember getting to one boat, and it was like, the owner of the boat was a very big official, very, very famous person. He's like, in my country, you drink one, I drink one, you drink two. And I was like, I'm going to pull this off. And I would throw the vodka shot over my shoulder into the sea. He's like, what did you just do? I said, in my country, we throw the vodka shot over our shoulder. Anyway, I did that for 5 months, and I was just sending money back home until Jason was finishing it up. And I remember we got to the point of building beds. He's like, I have all the wood. And I said, okay, I'm gonna get the clients. And he said, Jen, no. I went to the train station and I stood up. And our first two clients, they were Irish, and Michael and Patrick, maybe. Michael's a captain now. And I was like, are you guys looking for a place to stay? And like, yeah. I said, we're just opening up a crew house, literally just opening a crew house. And it's like, how much is it? It's like $100 for the week. Because we had no money to eat at this point. Brought them in. I said, Jace, that's Patrick and Michael. I was like, they need their beds built by 8 o'clock tonight. Jason said, I'm actually going to kill you. And he built the beds. And we had someone else move in who was a carpenter. And he was showing Jason how to build the beds. And so it was pretty amazing. And I just kept pulling people in. I was like, okay, here's the pressure. You need to build another 4 beds. He's like, Jen, I can't do this anymore. I was like, they paid us already. So I kept putting the pressure on. And then it was born.
So yeah, like I said, I stayed in Portside, you were just expanding. So obviously, you know, the idea of building a crew house, you know, that's great. What didn't you have any idea of? Like, well, obviously, head running a crew house to the reality.
First of all, let's get to the point where if you're an expat marrying another expat and moving to a country that you know nothing about, be prepared to do what you need to do for income, okay? Because we did not have the right to work here, but we had the right to build something here. So it was really challenging. Neither one of us are European, okay? But Jason owned an apartment here, and after Portside, where you lived, I had my first son, and I was, you know, I was in awe. I was like, being a mom, this is amazing. And meanwhile, Jason's trying to sell his apartment underneath us to buy the second house. And I remember he's like, well, I just need to be at the bank at this time. And I'm like, okay, still with baby in my arms. I'm still like in this ethereal sense. I'm like, I'm so happy. Because my son was born 2 years after my mom died on her birthday.
Wow.
So I felt like it was a gift, you know, and it was part of my grieving process. Like, I just felt happiness after. And he's like, well, we're signing because we're selling my apartment to buy the second crew house. And I just flipped out. I was like, what do you mean? What are you doing? And we took such a chance. So he had made a deal with someone in town, and they gave us like an owner's loan. And even to this day, I see Alain. His name is Alain Bernard. And he runs around town on his little scooter. And he's like, salut, Jennifer. And I'm like, I have to thank him, because otherwise wouldn't have had that loan. And he just thought, he's like, this is an amazing couple. I'm going to give them a loan. And we, you know, even through COVID, we paid him. And he was so relieved. But yeah, he sold the house from underneath us. And we had 2 weeks to move. We had nowhere to go, but the crew houses were full.
Yeah, they were full.
So anyhow, I ended up finding a place to live, and so we had Seaside and Portside.
Seaside and Portside, the ancient rivalry.
Yeah, yeah. I remember walking past some pubs, and then I would hear like people screaming Portside, and they would put Seaside.
Well, it doesn't help. So like with crew activities, like we'd get together at, you know, the toilet bowl / the beach, and we'd, you know, you play games and stuff like that. Yeah. But there is an ancient, you know, like obviously Max, who does the production on this podcast, she's a Portsider.
I have to say, the year that you, James Sneller, Maxine, Alex, the year you were there, that was the best bunch I've ever had. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are going to be upset about that. You all pulled together.
We are connected. Like some of us connected through like job searching. I mean, obviously Alex as well, and Piers and Alicia. And there was a big lot of us. But mm-hmm. You know, I'm Portside forever. I was tempted to get a tattoo soon. It's actually quite funny. I do know I am friends with Seasiders. You know, they do exist. I just hear them occasionally. So obviously starting, you know, in principle, starting crew house,
it was,
you know,
scary.
Just renting beds.
It was scary.
What you were, you know, obviously it's just, you know, it's, you know, you're helping people out. What did you underestimate when you created it?
The amount of energy.
Yeah.
So wait, let's get to how we named it. Okay, because we were burned by a few boat owners, and we thought we bought the name crewgrapevine.com. Okay. And we thought, let's open a glass door for the yachting industry. Everybody knows about you because they know about your CV and they interview you, but do you actually know about what's going on in the background? You don't. So we tried to open up this glass door website where you would know about the yacht, where the history, where, you know, somebody went berserk or somebody died or something. And all the lawyers we brought this to, they said, you're never going to be able to open this because it's quite private what happens on these boats, and you can't do it. But we already own the name. So by the time we finished Portside, we were running out of money. And I said, well, we already own Crew Grapevine. Let's just keep it like that. And we couldn't afford marketing, so you had to hear it through other people.
Yeah.
We didn't have business cards. We didn't have anything else. I mean, our website was pretty old, but it was a name that we owned, and it was about trying to share industry information. And this was before WhatsApp groups.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And we wanted to give people the information about what might happen if that captain's involved, or what everyone's experience is. And obviously, that's illegal, mm-hmm. you know, because there's a perspective. Everyone's experience is relative.
Yep.
So that's how we came about. So we just stayed with the name.
Obviously, it wasn't necessarily your first idea to open a crew house. But you've gone about it like they're your crew. The crew house is full of your crew, potential crew. You look after them like their crew.
Jason and I, our personality, we always looked after people. Mm-hmm. We're both children from a single... We're both only children from... how do you say, the only child from the first marriage. And for some reason, we're always trying to take care of people. Mm-hmm. And I had brought that to light. I was like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. and we do really do take care of everyone, and we try to solve everyone's issues, but you know, not everybody wants that solved, and we learn that in the long run.
Obviously I wanted to go to the Grapevine because I'm a woman. Okay. Like, well traveled, mm-hmm. you know, but I knew straight out the gate, having traveled other places, that mm-hmm. what I wanted to be able to focus on a job. I wanted safety for my head, mm-hmm. security, you know, all mm-hmm. of those kind of things, the possibility of connecting with other people. As, like, for me, it was just really appealing as a woman. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's more dangerous for a woman to go into the industry than a guy?
You know, I meet so many young men and women, and once they get jobs, I don't hear from them, and I wonder what's happened to them. I do warn them. I said, if it's too good to be true, don't apply. And we have caught a lot of people catfishing. And, you know, I do worry, you know, now being a mom, I do worry about these young men and women going off to something that they didn't agree to, mm-hmm. you know? And I've had a few phone calls. I've been the one to get in the car and drive to the port to pick someone up.
Can you just, obviously for people that are listening, can you just list a few things that you know that have happened or you've had to deal with, like emergencies or...
So, a lot of red flags. Is that what you're asking about?
Yeah, are there certain situations that you've had to, you know, you've had to help deal with? Just to give an example.
Well, when a captain's coming on to a young, you know, a new stewardess, you know, it's like, and I mean, being in a psychology background, it's normal for human nature if you are always in the same. if you're always sharing the same area with someone of the opposite sex or someone who you, the same sex that you are attracted to, you're eventually going to fall in love. Okay, it's human nature, hell or high water. Okay, and I've had a lot of young women say to me, you know, this captain's come on to me and done this and done that, and I'm like, can you take a tag? And during COVID was the worst, because I had a few of them, and I think everyone went stir crazy on the boats. And I actually got in my car and drove to the port, and I stood there, and I called the police until they let her off the boat. And I think that, I think one thing that young women need to figure out is, am I comfortable in this situation? Even if it's like, even if it doesn't bother your friend or your parent, or like, if it bothers you and you have a, women's instinct is never wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is never wrong. I'm sorry. But if you feel that weird feeling in your stomach, whether you're in love and you're feeling good about it, or whether you're like, this is a bad situation, it's never wrong, because it's about the energy in your body telling you, wait, there's something's wrong. And straight off the back, we've had a few people interview. I had Aneska, who works for me, she called me up one day. She said, I'm watching this interview. This one of our crews online watched, she's being interviewed, and he is abusing her. And she turned the phone. I said, can you go to her, grab her phone, and turn her phone off? And she fell to the floor crying. You know, if it doesn't feel right, shut it off. We have these phones where you can just shut people off and block them. Why don't we do that? Why do we?
Do you think, because obviously when you're coming to the industry, you want that opportunity. You want to believe that they're good guys and, you know, maybe this is the right boat and stuff like that. So you're ignoring your intuition a little bit. Like,
never ignore it. And even if I'm wrong, so I had a 19-year-old girl call me up. She's like, it's going to take me 18 hours to get to Malta. And I was like, how is that possible? And she was arriving at 2 in the morning to an engineer she's never met before and wasn't interviewed by the captain or the chief steward. And I was like, you are going there over my dead body. Mm. And she started crying. I'm so desperate. And then her mom called me and said, thank you. I said, no, no, no. But the boat manager called me, and it was a real company. I said, I'm sorry, sir, but you obviously don't have children. You cannot send a young woman to a foreign country and being picked up by someone she's never met before. You have to know the etiquette and the safety standards. And it was a big fight. And I think that young women need to, if you don't feel good about it, don't do it. If you need to take a 12-hour flight for a 2-hour flight, there's something wrong. You know, I think if a boat really wants to, they'll make it fast and easy as possible. You know, that's my only advice to them. And if anyone wants to ever interview you with on camera, with their camera off, shut it down right away. The number of,
I didn't know that was a thing.
Oh yeah, it's happened maybe 50, 60 times already.
It was like, I remember when I was starting, it was like, if they ask for photos, you know, bikini photos, like, and it, you laugh,
yeah,
but it happens.
Oh, but
you know, but like, I know some girls, you know, you might find a photo of a bikini
on Instagram.
Do you know what I mean?
I'd put a bikini on my dog and send it to them.
But there's red flags.
But there's also happens to the boys.
They have to send photos.
There's someone who's like going around asking the boys for S&M photos.
What?
And they're like, Jen, do you think it's real? I was like, oh, how desperate are you? Because this is obviously not real. But I think in terms of the females, I get to a point sometimes where I'm like, you cannot go. And I was like, you should call your mom, put her on speaker, and let's figure this out. And it's like, it's nobody. I always advise you, call your crew agent, call every crew agent you have ever registered and say, do you know this boat? They've just offered me a job and I don't feel like it's a good situation. And
they will know.
You know, like I've had like a great crew agency is YPI. They will say, yep, no problem at all. We'll look it up. And they'll say, you know, this is a great captain. He's got a good, they will give you the background. If everything lines up and matches, go for it. even if they didn't have the right etiquette, but at least everything matches up. They're in this port, this is the name of the captain. I mean, if you have a great crew agency that will give you the information, then you're safe. Mm-hmm. Now, if they say, well, we've never heard of the boat before, you know, then there's a red flag. But make sure you use the crew agencies, even if you didn't get the job through them. I'm sure they will help you.
Yeah. I mean, ask everybody. You know, like, it is a small community. I know we span the planet, but it is a very small community, mm-hmm. and somebody will know. So we're going to wrap this up, but I've just got a couple of final questions.
No, go ahead.
So we're envisioning, we're asking the ether, mm-hmm. in 5 years, where is the Jen and Jason empire? So, is the renovation done?
So we
the next renovation. This renovation.
We've opened up a third house. Do you know the third house?
No.
It's called Oasis.
Mm-hmm.
It went to the town.
It's not as good as possible.
I presented them.
Just
presented them with my business plan. I was like, I would like to buy one of your houses. Because Antib was closing down all their property. And I said, I'd like to buy one of your houses. And this is what we do. And this is the percentage of people we bring to your town. And they called me up. And they said, we have something for you. And they offered us this Oasis house. And we made it into a 10-bedroom house. Had three commercial properties. We sold one. And it's been amazing. Have you been there?
No, I haven't. Oh. I haven't. I'd feel like
people
I was
like
cheating,
it.
Though,
they
to be honest.
Like it because it's closest to the hop store. They said the crawling factor is amazing.
Oh my gosh! I was never a hop store person.
Oh, no.
No offense to the hop store, but there's a funky smell in there, and I just can't.
It smells like beer.
It's like a mixture of bleach and vomit and like all kinds of stuff. But you know, you can be great at the right time of the night. I always used to go elsewhere.
Do we see ourselves? We've been contacted by someone to expand our business, so we may go to Palma. I don't know.
Exciting.
But in the meantime, we've opened a boat sharing business called Nautic Club, mm-hmm. .com, and we're gonna have 6 boats, and it's members only.
Yep.
So it actually provides work for the people that work with us, that live with us, and they can come and clean the boats and have some...
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's a membership-only club, so it's been, you know, we're going up the tier. Well, do I think I'm going to open another grapevine? No.
No.
Tonight I have 72 children, and 2 of them are biologically mine.
72 children. You really are the mom of the industry.
I am the mom.
You are the mom.
I get the level A problems. Like, I'm getting arrested at the airport.
I'd love to do, like, obviously we're wrapping this episode up, but I do think we could probably fill episodes with the stories that you've heard of. But obviously with what I'm trying to do with Pearls, you know, regardless what it's turned into, is we have advice from the get-go,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, so whether that's, you know, an individual that's in the UK or in Australia, you know, I highly recommend staying with you.
Mm.
You know, the Your Crew Helpline, obviously that's now.
Yeah, I recommended that to
someone
who was in a big trouble last year.
Yeah, I mean, we say, like, blanketly, just put it on your phone. If you're looking for a job on board, put it on your phone.
What's the number for that?
I don't know.
Okay.
All links will be below
to
the Grapevine and Your Crew Helpline, especially for females. It's a bit of a game changer on board. So there's lots of stuff, but I would like to maybe do an episode just on the Greenie experience and coming to Antibes. You have said you've given advice throughout this, but obviously we're Tales from the Secret Laundry. So if there's a lady that's in the laundry right now, she's trying to clean a Yves Saint Laurent outfit right now, not really sure what to do with it, whether to steam it or not. What's your advice for her? Like, as in, you know, as a yachty, she's in now, coming out. What would your one piece of advice
be? Well, she's in. I mean, these new smartphones will give you all the information, right? So she needs to Google it and figure it out. And the number one thing is don't panic. I see so many young women panicking, and all you need to do is have confidence within yourself that you'll do the right thing. And if something happens, you just need to be honest and just say, look, this didn't work. We because this is obviously a dry clean only product. I've done that. We've done that. I remember the students coming to us saying, I cannot clean this. And I would go, I'd say, okay, I'll go with you because no one messes with the chef. And I said, ma'am, we cannot clean this.
Right. Some of it's just like it's got bobbly bits and like it's just fried brain.
It's not magic fairies doing everything, and I think that's what the owners of the yachts are used to that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you just let your chief steward know that this is not possible. I mean, there's someone always in charge.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to communicate, and I think that's what a lot of young people are not able to do because they want to be able to do the best. But if you communicate, say, hey, I need a little help.
Yep.
Always ask for help.
Always ask for help.
Mm.
Do you have any other crazy stories that you want to dive out? Finish on a crazy story, or you're okay with just going psycho at an owner?
I don't know if I'm allowed to tell the crazy stories. I mean, my best story was trying to get... this is a crazy story. Trying to get one of a very important government official from a country onto his yacht with his hired help.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember trying to get him on the passerelle, and the hired help had these high heels, and I said, you need to take these high heels off. But she was Russian. She didn't understand what I was saying. And she started yelling at me. I was like, okay, fine, don't take them off. And the captain was drunk. Everybody else was out. I was doing freelancing while I was doing that. And I was like, you need... And the hired... Well, it was a young lady, and she was the prostitute, and she got onto the passerelle, and she started going over, out, and I grabbed her, and I pulled her onto the quay, and I was like, take your shoes off now. And she's like, okay. And we tried to bring in her boyfriend. He was 300 pounds. Brought him in, and she just pushed him down, and he fell down, and I was like, you've killed your boyfriend. And she's like, make me coffee now. I was like, oh, all of a sudden you speak English. I was like, okay. I was like, no, make your own coffee. I was like, can't find the stewardess, can't find anyone, but apparently everyone's coming back to the boat. So I was trying to take all my dry goods out of the cabin. And she stood over me, and she's screaming at me. And I pushed her into her cabin, and I locked the door. And she started crying. And I was like, oh my God. And then you can see the boss laying there flat on his face. I was like, oh, I'm either going to get arrested.
You're going to be one of those bodies missing at sea.
I open up the door and she's like, this is a crazy story. Are you ready? So she's naked. And she was like, I'm so sorry. And that's the only way she could express herself was through sex. And she grabbed my hand and she's like, I'm so sorry. I was like, put your clothes on. Pick up your dead boyfriend. I was like, and make your own coffee. I was like, all right. She's like, okay. Eventually, I finished getting all my dry goods out of that cabin, brought it downstairs. She was awake, dressed, and the boyfriend was awake, and there were other crew. There was other people on the boat that I'd never seen before, and we still couldn't find the captain. And I went to bed. I woke up the next morning. They had taken my whole galley out to have a food fight, and there was foie gras and... anchovies and everything over the deck. And I was like, I guess I have to do more shopping. Captain woke up and he was like, what happened? I was like, I don't know. I just need more money because there's no food.
Possible. I'm getting off for a bit.
It's coming in 5 minutes. And all the deckhands were scrubbing. And then they had a massive food fight, whoever came back on board. So that's my craziest story. And then, of course, I wasn't in charge of cleaning it. I just had to make sure breakfast was on.
That's a good time to be in the galley.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For being part of this podcast. Obviously, I've known you for a long time.
Yes.
And what you do for the community shouldn't be underestimated.
Thank you.
At all. But I would like you to come back on at some point and we'll talk about the Greenie experience and kind of give them a bit more information about what to expect and everything else from really the lady that, you know,
thank you. The mother of auntie.
Mother of auntie.
I felt really warm when you said that to me, because actually a lot of people do. They call me Mama Jen.
Mama Jen.
And I'm like,
makes complete sense.
But the thing is, one of the head of interior from really big boat says to me, he's like, I'm really afraid of you. And I said, why? He said, because I've never heard you gossip about anyone else. and I know you hold everyone's secrets. And onto, and I was like, well, that, go back to that psychology degree. That's supposed to tell.
Yes, thank you very much. To the next time, we shall continue to drink some champagne. Thank you very much. If you have enjoyed this episode of White House Tales from the Soupy Old Laundry, we will be having a discussion about this episode in our app and with our community. If any of the issues that we've talked about, you want a bit more information, we can connect you with all of the individuals that can help you with life stuff. Not how to get a job, Greenies, sorry. But it is all to do with keeping you safe on board, keeping you making your experience on board the best you can. And if you don't want to do that, you can just tune into the next episode. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Charisse. Thank you.